Everyone dreams about living an uncommon life, but how we define that dream is very different for each of us. And for most, it's a lifelong pursuit. Welcome to the Uncommon Life Project podcast. We're going to introduce you to people who are living that life or enjoying the journey to get there. We're going to also give you some tools, tricks, and tips for starting or accelerating your own efforts to live an uncommon life, a life worth celebrating and savoring. Please welcome your hosts, Brian Dewhurst and Philip Ramsey.
Hello and welcome to another podcast of the Uncommon Life Project. This is your host, Philip Ramsey.
And I'm Brian Dewhurst.
And we are with one of my good friends, Courtney Woogie, today, which is a great story in and of itself, but I'm excited to get into it. He's one of the first guests that has all seven sources of residual income, so we're excited to dive into that. But let's go ahead and give a little background of Courtney, and then we'll jump right into it.
Yeah, so Courtney is a second-generation owner of FCIS Insurance and the founder, one of the founders of the Tree Town Music Festival here in Forest City, Iowa.
Good story is we're here in Forest City interviewing Courtney because the microphones are hard to come by here in Forest City, I guess. And so we thought we'd take the microphone to him. Welcome to the show, Courtney Woogie.
Thanks, Philip and Brian. Welcome to Forest City, snowy Forest City this morning. And the sky is blue, but we're going to have some fun.
By the time this airs, it's going to be very hot out and beautiful and sunny and summery. But when we were driving up, it was ugly. So we're glad that you guys are on the other side of it. Hope it's a sunny day when you guys are listening to this.
So. Yeah, I hope your listeners can pick up some things I've learned, because I've certainly learned the hard way on some things and the easy way on others. Yeah.
So let's jump right into that. So you haven't always been sitting here as one of the owners of FCIS. Was this always a dream of yours, or was this something that just kind of came to fruition?
No, complete opposite. I vowed never to return when I left Forest City, when I ran off to college. And I did work a stint with Philip, which is how I know him.
That's right.
At a company called Abbott Laboratories, selling pharmaceuticals in Cedar Rapids. So it was never a dream of mine. Sometimes circumstances just happen for the better. And here I am, as my father became ill and decided he needed to make a decision on selling it on the open market or convincing me to buy into the business and have this, I guess, built-in annuity from what financially I see. But it also takes work. And a quote he gave me was, it takes 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration.
Very true.
So, yep.
Very true. So let's talk about the pharmaceutical days, because those are honestly kind of like the golden handcuffs. I said that before in post shows and past shows. So let's talk about that. Is that something, how did you get out of that? Was it chosen for you, or did you make a conscious decision?
Yeah, that was a great job for the time being. But yeah, certainly I thought it was all great, except for one day when I was on a conference call, they decided that reps were no longer needed in the company. And it didn't matter if my name was Joe or Fred or I was a rock star or
Philip.
Or Philip. Didn't matter if I was a rock star or a dud, budgets were cut and I was no longer needed. So that was really the first shock to my system on, you know what, maybe it is worth it to pursue something that I have an ownership vested interest in. And that was kind of my first taste at, wow, I really am not in control of my destiny when those circumstances happen.
Yeah, I was on that same conference call. And you and I met for lunch that same day. And I remember both of us were kind of encouraged and excited for the next chapter of our lives, because I don't think we would have ever left that position, that company.
It's good money.
It's good money and good benefits and pretty easy.
Absolutely. It was a fantastic job while it was there. And
great boss, Jimmy G.
Yep.
Shout out to Jimmy G.
That's right. He was the man. But it just was not sustainable looking back to it. It was great, but just not sustainable.
So did you come right into FCIS out of that, or was there a...
No, I didn't. So my father laughed at me and said, you know, you had the world by the tail and all of a sudden now it's upside down. And he encouraged me at that time just to get my insurance license, just to go and get it. I had the time. I certainly had the wherewithal to do that. So I did that while I was looking for a new job.
Gotcha.
And just kind of dabbled my feet into it. So I got my licenses during that time. But I had not pulled the trigger yet because I had gotten another job selling medical supplies mm-hmm. for a family-run business I thought was a little more stable, and it turned out to be it was. But I sold medical supplies for the next 2 years almost before my dad got ill and said, look, it's decision time. Here's the price. You can either buy into it or I'm going to sell this on the open market.
Gotcha.
And that's where, you know, you talk to your family members and trustworthy people that know the business and make a decision. And as it turns out, it was the worst short-term decision ever, but the best long-term because I had to not only sell a lot of my assets to put skin in the game as my dad required, but I had to move my family from a very nice community up to small town Iowa. Which was a challenge on, are the kids going to adapt? Is my wife going to find friends?
Sure.
So the first year honestly sucked pretty bad. Mm-hmm. But looking back, and now that we're in it the sixth year, it was the best decision we've ever made. Mm. Because you just roll up your sleeves and you work. And I can see this built-in annuity now as long as we keep things moving.
Sure. And also kind of cool for you to step into your father's shoes and see all the hard work that he has done over the years, mm-hmm. the sacrifice he's made to make this extremely successful business. And now you get to run it in a little different way. Technology probably is a little different than Gaylord had it.
Mm-hmm.
But now streamlining things to the point where now it is yours. A month and a half ago, your father passed. Is that correct?
Two and a half months ago now.
Okay.
And so he had a lot of things already set up, and you know, life insurance and estate planning and all that stuff was in place, that's been an unbelievable process to go through and see that it provides a lot of comfort to those of us that are left, that he had a lot of mechanisms set mm-hmm. up. And that's my hope and dream, is that those mechanisms will continue to be set up for other people to drink scotch out of the barrel after it's been aged properly.
Absolutely.
So,
and you've always had this residual mindset, because I remember in pharmaceuticals you had a rental property,
mm-hmm.
and then once you got to Forest City, Iowa, you started having this idea of a tree town and mm-hmm. having a festival. Tell us about that thought process and how that came to fruition.
Well, I've always had the entrepreneur spirit and always believed that you have to have a few different eggs in the basket to be able to have some long-term wealth. I always knew that. I just didn't know the right mechanisms to play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you read books and you see movies and you see real estate. How hard can it be to buy some properties and rent them out and everything cash flows? And that does absolutely work. It is a way to get there, but it still does take work. You know, sometimes tenants don't pay, and sometimes, you know, you have to do some maintenance things on the houses. So you got to know what you're doing.
Sure.
But it is absolutely a way where wealth can be built. And Shannon and I finally have sold our last property in Cedar Rapids. We've kept some all these years. Mm-hmm. And finally, the timing was right where we did sell our last property last fall. So we've had a couple here in Forest City that we've bought and sold. So we are still continuing on that mindset that for the right property, we'd love to buy, because there is some tax benefits and some long-term wealth benefits.
Sure.
But I've also been involved in other network marketing type pieces and always have looked for avenues to get involved in things.
Sure.
Like when this Tree Town Music Festival idea approached me. It was never my intent to get into the music festival world. I mean, sometimes just by networking and being out involved and knowing people, things just happen and questions are asked. So being in Forest City, I was not going to let this opportunity pass me to be involved in a large scale music festival in a town I grew up. I just didn't have it in me to say, no, I'm not going to be a part of that. But you have to be smart about it. You can't put every egg in that basket, and sure. you have to get the right people involved.
And so that's an entirely different business.
Entirely. A lot of action happens in 4 days, where the insurance business, it's very, you know, methodical, and you have to have a 2 to 3 year vision. And it's not like you can walk in and somebody just writes you a check for insurance day one. I mean, you have to build some relationships mm-hmm. and the music industry is very, you know, cutthroat. There are a lot of musicians trying to make it, and you're always being asked by all these musicians, listen, can I play? I'm really good.
Yeah.
And then there's 2,000 people behind him saying the same thing. So, but a lot of moving parts and a lot of action in 4 days.
Yeah. And so now that you're 6 years in to FCIS and is running this, what things do you notice now? Like, cause your dad owned this while you were growing up. What things do you now appreciate looking back is like, oh, that's why dad was doing that. Or that's why dad said that. Or do you have any of those moments?
Absolutely. It's the relationships that he had built that all I had to do, to Philip's point, was maybe add some technology to it and add that next level of, oh, we can do that. You know, the relationships were already there with the clubs and the insurance carriers and everything else. It's just the way of doing it 15, even 10 years ago was more handwritten and old school things that we know as older millennials now, you know, adding some video and some podcasting and some of those things have really changed the game. Even when it comes to PNC insurance.
Yeah. I think your dad's story is fascinating. Can you walk our listeners through the business when your dad, his name is Gaylord, kind of had the aha moment and how that kind of...
Well, he was a problem solver. Yeah. He was a problem solver. He saw a problem.
Yeah.
And then he figured it out.
Yep. And that's, in my mind, in any business you endeavor in, you just have to be willing to step in and help people and solve something. And the business started in 1978, so it's 40 years old this year. So we're having a little party this year, this summer. But he was just your average independent insurance agent that you see on every corner of America, just helping people with their houses and businesses and friends that he gets to know in the community. Well, it wasn't until 1981 where he met a fellow named John K. Hansen, and he was the founder of Winnebago Industries, a very large Fortune 500 company here in Iowa, based in Forest City. And he had an issue with customers buying RVs and the depreciation, and them getting a little upset when they would own these big motorhomes and they would have a claim on their insurance. And these things depreciate a lot more than the average automobile does.
Sure.
So on a brand new coach, if you have a claim within the first probably 4 or 5 years and you have a note, leverage on that RV, you're upside down. Well, the insurance carrier at that time was only going to pay you ACV, actual cash value, what that coach was worth at the time of loss. So if you owed 90, and the insurance carrier was only going to pay 60 because that's what it was worth. Not only do you lose your RV, you can no longer camp with your family. You actually have to write a check for $30,000 to make this whole thing right.
Wow.
So he developed what we now know in the industry as total loss replacement for the RV.
Wow.
So he talked to Foremost Insurance back in 1981 and took the lead underwriter fishing and said, we got to solve this problem. And the endorsement that was put on it was for the first 5 model years, the insurance company will replace that RV with like, make, and model. And then the next 5 model years is purchase price guarantee. So for 10 years, you have kind of a depreciation protection on that coach.
Wow.
Certainly, you guys are in the insurance world. You know, there's a premium to be had for that. But sometimes price isn't everything. People were actually willing to pay additional premium dollars for that endorsement because they knew of the issue with them driving this thing down the road and the cause of an accident. And like, I don't want to lose my RV and have to write a check.
Especially if they knew somebody who had to do that.
That's right.
They'll pay it.
That's right. So that's kind of what launched us into the national scene, got licensed in multiple states, and got us into the RV insurance world, which is still makes up about 65 to 70% of our business.
Wow.
You know, of course, I have been tasked with growing the business. When you buy something, if you just keep it the same, it's going to take a long time to pay off that debt. So the idea is 1 + 1 should equal 3.
Right.
So that's where the 99% perspiration comes in, where you just add a little technology and continue to harness what's already been built, and 1 + 1 can equal 3. And we are growing, but you can never take your eye off the prize unless you're ready to.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're ready to perpetuate to the next generation and find your little beach resort down in Florida or Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
what, very cool. What yeah. mind shifts have to happen in your head from going to a pharmaceutical rep, managing yourself, to mm-hmm. now managing accompanying others?
Well, there's some parallels with making sure you have a schedule and understanding your own finances and cash flows and trying to predict the future. But the differences are you're now responsible for everybody that works here, and mm-hmm. you're now responsible for your own rent on the building and your own paycheck. Mm-hmm. So it's a different shift when you have the responsibility. It actually, when you wake up in the morning, it's the first thing you think about. Versus when I was in pharmaceuticals, the first thing I thought about was not that I'm going to have to go catch my own food today.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a lot was given to you, right? You had a bag and you had to carry, and you got a gas card and a vehicle, and life was good. Where the shift now is, you can add your 100% your own value.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different mindset. It's not for everybody.
Sure.
You have to be prepared for it, but it can be extremely rewarding on days that you just don't feel quite right. You can say, I'm the boss. I'm just going to go and golf today. But you also have to be prepared for the other side of it, that if you miss something because you're golfing, you're having fun, you just have to be willing to accept that.
Yeah. Tell us what your advice gave you when you switched into business owner mode.
I think aside from the 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration, he said, congratulations, you now are an owner of a company. You only have to work half days. I said, you know, by God, you're right. I'm only working half days. He said, well, what I mean by that is you get to pick the first 12 hours or the second 12 hours. And it's not that you're always on the grind working and, you know, doing things constantly for 12 hours. You're just always thinking, you know, for 12 hours every day, I am at least put some thought into, outside of normal 8-to-5 working hours, of how can I do this in the business, or how can I help this individual or company, or what if I did this, what would happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's a lot easier to work when it is your own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just becomes more natural. So it's good and bad. It's, you know, some people that we have great employees here at 5 o'clock, they can shut it down and go home, and they don't have to think about an insurance policy until 8 o'clock the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there in pharmaceuticals.
Sure.
When I got home at, 2 o'clock or 2:30 in the afternoon, I didn't think about work until the next morning.
Sure.
So we're now, it's a shift in thinking where there's a lot more thought put into it, but I can also do that and play golf at the same time.
Sure.
It's great. Okay. I want to go to, cause you're the first guest that has all 7 sources of residual income.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go through them individually and then kind of talk about your situation. And then after that, I want to talk about how do you intertwine all of them together to have a cohesive plan for you and your family
mm-hmm.
moving forward. So let's go through them. Let's start out with the first one, which would be banking.
Mm-hmm.
How do you bank and how do you make that residual?
So because of my partners that are sitting here, I have learned quite a bit from Brian about the banking industry, because I believe your history has been in the banking industry, right?
Our family, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So they have set me up on a policy where I can use my own cash to create interest off of it. So how do banks make money? Well, they make money on interest, right? One of the things they do is make interest on the spread. So I am always trying to utilize my cash position on where I can make a little bit of interest on that cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's just off the top of my head. That's what I perceive myself as a bank.
Sure.
Certainly, do I carry a debt load? Of course I do. I had to buy a business. Debt is a part of normal things when you're growing businesses and buying things.
Mm-hmm.
But if your interest rate of your debt is less than maybe the interest rate you're making in the market,
mm-hmm.
you've in a sense made yourself into a bank and created that spread.
Yep. Sure. Good. Okay. Number two
is real estate.
Yep. So I have, I wanted to be, sorry for those people that didn't want to hear political propaganda here, but I tried to be the Donald Trump of Cedar Rapids before his political career back in the early 2000s and buying property like it was my job. And I worked at, at Abbott Labs, and I figured, you know what, I'm going to try to do something for myself. And I just started buying these little houses, 40 or 50,000 a pop, 10% down payment isn't very much. So I was buying these things and renting them out for $400 or $500. So I got up to, I think, 8 of those things before I realized either I'm going to have to do this full time or I'm just going to have to start selling some. Because it was at that time I started to have a family and my time started to get less and less on dealing with rental property type things. So when my wife and I got married, she also had a house that we kept and rented out. And over the last 15 years, we have bought and sold different real estate. And per hour, if I had to break down my hourly rate on what I was doing, it might be $30-$40 an hour for those analytical folks. But all in, I haven't, if you spread out your real estate risk enough, it's very hard to lose money as long as you buy the properties right.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
and I think this is an important part I want, because we talk about this a lot with our other, just a lot of clients and different things.
Mm-hmm.
You basically harvested that portfolio to make a bigger capital investment into not only FCIS, but then the building that FCIS sits in. So
great point.
Walk us through that.
Absolutely. So when I made the decision to buy the business, I needed a strong down payment. I needed some equity. So where would I find equity? Well, in my rental properties. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I had some other, a boat and my house in Cedar Rapids. And there were some other pieces of equity I pulled from, but it was primarily property. And I was able to 1035 exchange that into the building we're now sitting in.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are, if you do it within 2 years, I don't know, I'm not a CPA,
sure,
but there are ways you can exchange property and continue to get a bigger piece of property that, like this commercial building that we're now in.
Right, without paying tax.
That's correct.
So let's jump, because I think this is important. So we'll jump to number four. That's just traditional business. So FCIS is a traditional independent insurance agency. So that's number four. And then that is paying rent to your kind of number two, real estate.
Absolutely. So
you own as well.
Since the building is separate from the business, the business can be anywhere. It can be in Texas in a rental space, but I have an LLC that owns the business, and it's just what's called a triple net lease back to the insurance agency.
Gotcha.
So the business is responsible for the rent, the taxes, and the insurance.
Nice.
And so my LLC that owns the building is just really a holding place to continue to collect the rent to pay off the debt.
Sure.
And once the debt is paid off, then you've got something.
So when you bought into FCIS, you really bought into two different assets.
That's correct. And it didn't happen at the same time.
Sure.
I bought the business number one because my dad still wanted rent on the building.
Totally.
He wanted to go fishing and hunting even more than he was doing. And he thought, that's a little cash flow for him.
Sure.
So I bought into the business to start. He wanted to understand that I was actually going to be continuing to work the business and not just be, 50 to 60% of second, third, fourth generation owners have failed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no secret. Yeah. You read any book.
Because they want to just reap the rewards without the hard work.
Absolutely. And I can see that in other things. So I made a conscious effort that I'm not going to let that happen. And so after year two is when I then bought the building. After I had a little bit of equity built up in the business, my father felt comfortable enough, like, listen, you need the reward now of owning the real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Let me cash out of it and start that perpetuation plan that we have talked about so we can then build into a longer term plan that was built quite well for both of us.
Sure.
Nice.
But it takes a lot of communication and attorneys and accountants.
Get your pens out, folks. This is like dropping knowledge.
Yeah. So number three, is investments.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a retirement plan and you do that.
Yep.
And maximizing that benefit through your business. So the business is not only building equity in the business itself,
That's
and
right.
The real estate.
Yeah. So the businesses can also be considered an investment because the idea is to grow them. But there's traditional ways, 401ks, buying mutual funds, buying stocks. You know, I had another idea when I was younger that I was going to be a day trader. Well, I did that for about 4 days. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I really didn't make anything. I bought and sold some stuff and it was fun and it was a rush. But then I'm like, I don't want to spend my time looking at tracking all these stocks all day.
Right.
This is just going to make me stressed out and smoke cigarettes and do things I shouldn't be doing. So I did that for 4 days, and I figured at the end of 4 days, I didn't make any money doing it. So I figured that wasn't the best route for me to go.
So you retired. You retired from that business.
I retired from day trading. So now it's more of a long-term approach. You can't follow the bumps up and down of the market. You have to trust your wealth advisors, as I have here, and you have to look at things for the long term. 401ks, certainly if you have cash and you want to take a risk, you know, buy some mutual funds and buy some stocks, but mm-hmm. don't put all your eggs in that basket. It can be fun and rewarding, especially the last year or so when we've had a pretty good market.
Totally.
But Winnebago Four City was back in the 70s. It was known as the Little Town of Millionaires, because the stock price of Winnebago was just splitting and quadrupling and just going up so crazy.
Wow.
But all these people were millionaires on paper,
uh-huh.
right? What happened to half of them when the stock came back down?
Yeah.
They were broke on paper.
Yeah.
So it was like at the end of the day, their life didn't get any better.
Sure. Good
point.
Certainly half the people took that stock, diversified it when it was high and were smart about it. But paper money is cool, but it doesn't mean anything until
you convert it to real assets.
That's right.
Gosh, knowledge.
So then Treetown is its own separate business
mm-hmm.
and legal structure, and you have
it absolutely is. That was designed as a partnership. So that was my sort of taste in, you know, I always had my dad as a partner, but having family as a partner is a little different than just having other business partners. You know, for those that are in stock clubs and things, it's sort of the same thing where you're putting each putting some skin in the game and you're all trying to run a business. So certainly it hasn't come without its bumps in the road. Partnerships can be very good because 1 + 1 = 3, but 3 / 2 can also be 0 if you don't do it right.
Sure.
So there have been some bumps, and that industry is a little different than insurance, but it is continuing forward, and we've got our 5th year this May. So
this is a big concert.
It is one of the premier music festivals, and most of it is country. There is a rock night on Thursday night, but most of it's country. Premier music festivals in the Midwest.
Sure.
So it quadruples the size of Four City, and there
in
is
a weekend.
In 4 days, people come in, and you know it's on the Winnebago campground.
Sure.
Lots of electricity and water and power out there and such. And Heritage Park has a lot of ground that the stage gets put up, and it becomes a mini city.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of activity, lot of zeros and commas come in and go out
in four days. But it's cool to be a part of that, especially the city you grew up in. Like you're going to be.
It absolutely is. And I feel kind of like a farmer. Because I'm constantly watching the weather and saying, what's the weather going to do? And how's the attendance? How are the people going to react in those 4 days?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But it's another LLC that's on my tax return. And it's a startup that I got involved in that takes some time.
Sure.
You know, any startup will, anybody tells you that you're going to make money right away is lying to you.
I heard this once. The Japanese, they say basically they don't plan to make any money off of business for the first seven years.
Yeah, I mean 7 years. If you can't have a plan to make some money after 3 or 4,
sure.
You know, you can always inject money back into it if you're growing like bananas, mm-hmm. and that's all fine. Look at Amazon, Facebook.
Sure.
You know, all those tech companies, they didn't make money for a long time because they needed all that cash to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was easy. Yeah, it was easy to dump fuel back on the fire. But there's value in that growth. You know, there's cash in the bank, but there's also value in the growth of the business because that still is worth something.
I always tell people it's kind of like a slingshot, though. The farther you can pull that rock back, the farther it's going to shoot out. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to keep pulling it back, and it's hard.
It's
going to make you go.
It's extremely hard when you're spending all your cash. Uh-huh. And you're building something, and there is some inherent risk there with, you know, what happens if the slingshot breaks, mm-hmm. right? Like one of your competitors just completely undercuts you, and you can't, you know, in 2 weeks you're done. And that's mm-hmm. an extreme case, sure. you know.
But it can happen. We've heard of that.
It absolutely can happen.
True point.
Yep. So, but that's why you diversify. Mm-hmm. You keep some mutual funds. You have some real estate. You try to become a bank.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So the next one is a subscription model or an affiliate revenue. Mm-hmm. How do you fit into that category?
Subscription or affiliate model. So I guess off the top of my head, I would think that is more like an annuity mm-hmm. where people are paying into a club and you really don't have to pump the gas much to continue to generate this revenue every month.
I would say FCIS for you is exactly
that. I was just going to say that as long as we continue to have good policies for our customers, mm-hmm. you know, certainly they continue to pay the premium and we continue to help them. That is more of a subscription model. Sure. That one's a little more challenging. I'll be honest. You know, we deal with a lot of RV clubs, mm-hmm. which that's an easy subscription model. People mm-hmm. pay $50 a year to be in the club. Mm-hmm. And they provide, you know, a magazine and all these other things.
Sure.
That's more of a traditional subscription.
You're right.
You know, clubs. So I haven't started a club yet, but that could be the next thing.
We might have just come up with something.
That's right. Could be, at least today, the Snow Shovelers Club of Northern Iowa, where you can pay a fee and you get a new shovel every year.
Get the neighborhood.
Very powerful right now.
That's right. It would be very powerful.
All right, let's go to six, which is royalties. And when I think about you, and Brian and I were talking before we had this interview, mm-hmm. we thought the Tree Town Festival for you is definitely royalties.
Yep.
And how you kind of collaborate all that together. But would you agree with
that? It absolutely is. The value in the festival is the brand, right? Because anybody can open up their checkbook and book Keith Urban, Toby Keith, and say, I want you to come here. And if you write him a check, trust me, they will come. I've seen it. They will jump on their plane. If you wire them a whole bunch of money, and they will come play for you. But what the challenge is to create that brand, which is where you get the royalties. Mm-hmm. If you can create a brand, you can, that's the value in the royalty is the Tree Town Music Festival. People know it and they know what to expect when they come up there. And they're always willing to spend that $150 ticket to remember that good time they had.
Because it's a memory and you can't put a price on memories.
Absolutely. So, but certainly to the artists, that's pretty cut and black and white where their music, they could be sleeping and they will get a royalty because their music was played on mm-hmm. Spotify or somebody downloaded it. So that's, again, more traditional, but still the music world, I think the royalty is in that brand.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And lastly, network.
Our favorite, Philip.
Our favorite, network marketing.
I've been involved and my wife is more involved in a lot of these things. And, you know, everybody traditionally says, well, it's just a Ponzi scheme. It's not really a Ponzi scheme because it's not a house of cards that's falling down. Certainly some of them, like any business model, has fallen down. But you look at any organizational structure, right? There's one person at the top and you've got people under you that are moving the bus forward that creates this big tree effect. And it's no different than network marketing. They just do not use traditional advertising mm-hmm. to do such. So my wife has been involved in NetWorks. She's been involved in a wine distribution company called the Direct Sellers. But Sellers is like a wine cellar. It's not S-E-L-L-E-R-S. It's C-E.
Thoughtful.
Yeah, very thoughtful. You know, very good brand.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably getting some royalties off of that. But, you know, and back in the olden days when I had a million ideas as well, if people remember the Quickstar and the Amway days.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, you were approached by every single one of your friends.
Yeah.
And I was a young entrepreneur trying to make in this world. I'm like, you know, that is a heck of a business model. I am in. And did it create income? Yes, it did. You know, I had a couple people under me and we were, you know, putting the lotion on ourselves and drinking the juice and we're going to work out and drinking the powders. And
I love
those models, It has worked for my wife. She is a full-time nurse.
And she's a go-getter.
She absolutely is.
And shout out to Shannon.
Yeah, being a mostly a full-time mother and full-time wife to me, she's got a lot on her plate.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to even fill up the gas tank. She has so much going on.
Absolutely, yes. Sometimes the gas tank doesn't get full, but we look past those things in our marriage, and we still continue to deal with the time that we have during the day to do these things. And part of what she does is when she's at home with the kids and doing random things is, you know, she gets involved in these network marketing opportunities because you can do those from anywhere. Mm-hmm. As long as you have a mobile device, you can do it from anywhere.
Yeah. I think the other big thing for me, because I'm the pro network marketing of this equation for Philip and I, but when you look at the startup cost for FCIS and buying into this and reorganizing basically your entire portfolio versus your wife getting started in a network marketing company, talk to the listeners about that different investment level.
Yeah, so the buying into an existing business takes a check if you're going to buy into it. It's like buying a car or buying a piece of real estate. Typically, there's a down payment involved and there's some equity involved.
Sure.
But with network marketing, their whole play is little to no money down, right? Like for $50, hardly any skin in the game, you can buy a packet and then it becomes your equity is your labor and your time, your advertising ability to talk to your friends.
Sure.
Right? Some others, you know, put billboards up and advertise all over and pay money to do that. Well, there's a lot of free advertising platforms, Facebook, you know, Snapchat, all these things where that network marketing piece has picked up. But you have to use your labor and your time, right? Every minute is worth something. And if you can utilize that, it can become where you're sleeping and you wake up and you have $300 more than you didn't have when you went to bed.
Sure.
So
let's kind of start wrapping this up because we're starting to kind of go over time. But I would say for the seven sources of residual income that you just talked about in each one of your examples, I think the way that they all tie together is they're all dealing with more cash flow for you and your family. And that's the way you went into it. And I would say for you, you're never afraid to make a calculated risk as long as it helps you with your cash flow. And that's how they all are kind of organized for you and your family. And that's how they fit together because it's pushing you forward or moving the bus forward, as your analogy is, to help you in cash flow diversifying all the same, all without taking your eye off the ball where one of them might take way more time than the other. They're all streamlined together for the cash flow. So that's what I would say, unless you have other thoughts.
Yeah, I would agree. I would add that it's never a utopian world where, you know, you just follow these 10 steps and you will just be set for life. Mm-hmm. It never works that way. But if you can do all seven, chances are, if you actually spend some time doing it, three or four of them are gonna pop and do pretty good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe one or two is a failure, right? But if you're shooting 60, 70% success, I deem that a good thing,
sure.
Which is what my experience has been. Some of them have not done so well, but others have just taken off by a little bit of fuel.
And helps you make the other ones maybe be a little bit more successful as you put money towards them.
Therein light is the old school investment theory of diversification.
When you look out over the next 10 years, you got 6 years under your belt. What are you most excited about in terms of just building your business, your family, and just continuing down the path that you're on?
Yeah, I'm most excited about, I think, just when it boils down to it, getting some of the debt paid off and knowing that I have a plan put together to continue to use the cash flow and the growth of some of these things to just continue to get the debt paid off where I can really be a bank and go from a 2% spread all the way up to a 7 or 8% spread. And it becomes a fast moving rock down the hill. So yeah, the rock isn't moving really fast for me right now. I'm not a very patient guy, so maybe it's moving faster than I think, but I'm just looking forward to that rock moving really fast where I maybe don't have to always work 12 hours a day,
sure.
Where I can, my mind can be maybe other places and I have some open hours in the day to maybe pursue something else, maybe some philanthropy, you know? I mean, that's one of the steps Warren Buffett talks about is, you know, if you've created this wealth, why not give back to other things that you believe in once you've reached that pinnacle. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, is paying off the debt and then switching my mindset to perpetuating to the next generation and giving back.
Yeah. And so, you saw that with your dad, and that not only the way he had things taken care of, you know, for you and your family, but also I think that was probably a big catalyst for investing in Tree Town and giving back to Forest City.
Absolutely. That's why, one of the reasons why I did that, because I wanted others to benefit from that event, and they have. But it is rewarding to give back, as you guys know. You know, if you make $100 and you give 20 of it back to somebody that didn't have anything, I mean, that can be more rewarding than making $1,000. So
very cool.
So how would our listeners find out more about you? How would they reach out to you?
Well, I don't know. I guess just Google my name.
Humility.
Yeah. I don't know.
I would say you can go to www.fcisinsurance.com, or you can go to www.treetownfestival.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Buy your tickets.
Yep. Buy your tickets to the festival. Come up to Forest City. And, certainly I'm an open book. If you see me and you want to come up and chat with me, you're more than welcome to. I may be a little busy, but I promise I will give you an ear for a minute and chat with you. I'm very social.
Yeah. For sure. My last question, unless Brian has any more.
I don't know.
So your father passed away 2.5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
If he were here today, what would you tell him? What would you say to him? What would you?
Well, that's a tough one. See, because he knew he was going to die in the last 2 months of his life. And we really, thank the good Lord above, we really had 2 straight months of talking. Mm-hmm. And it was the best blessing ever. Mm-hmm. It was somewhat of a curse because you knew the end was near. But, honestly, I asked him everything I wanted to. Certainly there's specific things where if a customer calls and is upset or a partner gives you the wrong rub, you're like, what would my dad do?
Mm-hmm.
You try not to get in that mindset because you're still your own person. But honestly, I would ask him, why the hell didn't he get his colon checked out earlier?
Yeah.
So another public service announcement, he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, and it's a very preventable thing. So if you're 50, please get it checked. If you have a family history, you have to do it when you're 40. So mine's coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Colonoscopies are very, they've gotten a lot easier. And I would just ask him, why the hell didn't he get that checked out earlier? Because he would still be here today.
That's a good point. Guys, thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions for Brian and I, please feel free to reach out. Our website is www.wealth. What in the world is it?
Edit.
Oh my gosh. Guys, if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to Brian and I at www.uncommonwealth.com. Our phone number is 515-650-3009. We would love to hear where you guys are at, any questions you'd have. Thank you so much, Courtney Woogie, for your time. And you've been listening to Uncommon Life Project. This is your host, Philip Ramsey.
And I'm Brian Dewhurst. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Uncommon Life Project, brought to you by Uncommon Wealth Partners. Be sure to visit uncommonwealth.com to learn more about our services. Don't miss an episode as we introduce you to inspiring people who are actively pursuing an uncommon life.